On air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. You're with Leon Compton on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Let's talk about what used to be called co-ops or maybe even communes, but are now, I think, broadly grouped under the category of intentional communities. It's probably no surprise to you that many people are looking towards alternative ways of living, that might help foster closer knit communities, might help overcome some of the challenges of the housing market as it exists in Australia today. And so we've invited a panel of guests in the studio. Each of them has a story to tell about their own search for an alternative to the dream of a quarter acre block in suburbia that grips a majority of people listening to the radio here and anywhere you'd have the conversation around the country. Modern day communes, or intentional communities as they're known, are actually thriving around Australia, and yet we hear very little about them. There are a number of them dotted around Tasmania. They've got a strong emphasis often on sustainability, but the one thing that they all share is the goal of building community ties, and there are more of them planned. So let's roll up our sleeves this morning, spend a bit of time talking to a panel of guests that we've assembled from right around the country to talk about intentional communities and what they're like and what they do. Let's welcome our guests. First up, in our Hobart studios this morning, Linda Seaborn, who works in the co-housing co-op of South Hobart. Linda, good morning to you.
Good morning, Leon.
Lovely to see you this morning. Also, Hiri Lev, urban designer and the proponent of an intentional community that's yet to jump off the drawing board and into the sky. It's been good enough to come into our Hobart studios. Hiri Lev, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's say good morning to Ian Higginbottom, instigator of the Cascade Co-Housing Group. He's joined us out of Canberra this morning. Ian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Leon.
And Luke Morgan, community leader at the Poatina Village, who's driven all the way across to our Launceston studios. Luke Morgan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right, now, team, because we're assembled right across the far-flung reaches of the country and are talking this morning, can I please invite you to treat this as an intentional community where everybody gets to jump in and share their thoughts rather than me directing questions to you all individually, because it'll just sound a lot better if we're having one big chat. Luke, can I start with you, because you wake up in one each and every morning. What is an intentional community? Tell us what it's like.
Well, for us in Poatina, it's really about how do we structure life so that we maximise connections. There's a high degree of autonomy in terms of people have their own houses that are theirs as part of a body corporate. But in the how we do life, are we just trying to establish our own little empire? Or am I conscious of the person down the road, the person across the street, some of their needs, some of the moment they're in, and how might I reach out to them to bring resource that they may or may not have in that moment themselves.
And how is that different to life in the suburbs, in your quarter acre block, or, you know, your 650 square metre block, with, you know, neighbours around and the shop down the road? How's it different?
Well, my sense, if you rewind the clock a few decades, there were greater similarities. As I think of my time growing up, it was just normal to be in and out of each other's yards down the street. But as years have rolled on, in my experience, we're more likely to have larger fences to be, you know, put up the roller door, drive in, roll it down. So our sense is something of community has gone missing since we see, you know, sometimes it's horrible, but people die in their homes and they're not discovered for a time. So I think if you rewind the clock, there's similarities. If you come to 2020, I think there are some differences. So it's not trying to recreate the past, but how do we live in light of knowing what's happening for those among us, the person at the corner store, knowing when the kid comes in and the family's doing it tough, to look out for them, to spread their wings appropriately, to care.
Linda Seaborn, you live in one of these intentional communities in South Hobart. Tell me, I mean, how is it set up? What is life like there? How does the system work?
So the setup there is a co-housing, like where Ian lives. And so all the cars are parked on the outside. The houses are small houses, and it's designed like a village. And there's 11 houses and a common house. So in the common house, we have meals together a couple of times a week, and we've got common facilities. And then our houses are small houses. So that's part of the environmental sustainability in it. And It's designed so that you bump into each other for what's called happenstance. So when you come home from work and you get off the bus or you park your car in the car park and you walk through, you walk past the common house and you bump into people. They're gardening, they're out playing with their kids, and you have all this social interaction that's just a normal part of your day-to-day life.
And you've lived in a place in these sorts of communities almost all of your adult life.
I have. When I was thinking back to it, I mean, I grew up in your cul-de-sac community as a child. So my childhood was, we all knew each other's business. That was quite communal. And then in my 20s, I lived in New Zealand in this really interesting community called Wilderlands that was set up by the Quakers during the First World War. And we had a honey business and sold internationally to finance the community. And then when I came back to Australia, I lived in New South Wales in a number of communities, and I was actually part of a few intentional community national conferences and things like that. And then I moved back to Tasmania when it was time for my daughter to start school, and looked around for a group that was doing a similar thing here and found the co-housing cooperative, and so I became one of the founding members there. So I have not lived very much of my life in your sort of isolated suburban block lifestyle, and I wouldn't want to.
Well, there you go. Ian Higginbot, actually, by the way, someone is tapping a pen on their desk and I need that person to just help me and stop. Who is that person at the moment? Ian Higginbottom is instigator of the Cascade Co-Housing Group. Ian, so we heard Linda talk a little bit about her experience and what life's like, and Luke about his. How does your co-op work?
To be honest, it's very similar. It's the same physical setup as Linda spoke about. We have 14 units. They're like townhouses with quite a good size common house. So everyone, again, has a private house. And we have these reasonably extensive shared facilities. So we've got it's like a clubhouse, if you like, where we can have common meals or parties or get-togethers, a TV room, a children's room, a shared workshop where you can go down and build things, do that kind of thing. A lot of it, in my mind, is about facilitating people interacting with each other. Nothing very much is forced or compulsory. It's
And
you want
how
to
do
live
you
their
decide,
life, but be able to come together when you want to.
How do you decide who gets in? Like when a property becomes vacant, how do you go through the challenge then of deciding who gets in? How do people find out about it? And do you have to sort of interview them, if you like, to move into your co-op?
Not really, because we're set up as a strata title development, which actually doesn't give the community the right of veto on who moves in. But then you go, well, how do we make sure, you know, we want people who are going to be compatible? And our experience is that people are self-selecting. So we ask people who are selling, and there's only been about 4 out of the 14 houses sold in the last 30 years. People haven't wanted to sell. But when they do, people will go through the normal marketing, but we ask them to invite people to come in and experience the community, come to one of our shared meals, and that way they know what they're getting into. And if you're going to move into a housing situation, like a community with 14 other households, you're probably not going to move in lightly if it isn't going to suit you. So we found it's very self-selecting, and everyone who's bought has been a fantastic addition to this community.
On Mornings Around Tasmania, we're talking about intentional communities. Linda Seaborn, Ian Higginbottom and Luke Morgan all have the experience of living in these communities, even as they speak to us today. Hiri Lev is an urban designer and proponent of an idea called Christdorf. Hiri, tell me about your proposal. How does it sort of, is it similar to what we're hearing about from our other guests this morning?
I guess all the things that Linda, Luke and Ian said resonate with me. And I guess the level that sort of I look at it is also one of a designer. So I was born in Europe, Czech Republic. It's obviously a country with a beautiful countryside full of tiny little compact villages that have been there for a few centuries. And they have very strong local communities with a very strong sense of belonging and tradition that dates back generations. And so when I moved to Australia in 2005, of course, I was suddenly met with the harsh reality of the suburbia, where people move in, move out, and warehouses are kind of temporary solutions, more like tents. Unless, of course, you've reached the pinnacle of your real estate portfolio and live in the beachside ultimate sort of thing that everyone dreams of.
So you actually have designed your own intentional community that you're looking for investors to come in and be part of.
Yeah, well, I've designed some preliminary, I guess, notion of it. Once we secure a property, the village would be, of course, designed to fit that place. So you start with the place when you're designing anything. But what I'm looking at is, I guess, a very compact sort of urban model with really strong local character informed by the place where we will be. And so there'll be some guiding principles, and there'll be certain preservations of the majority of the land for nature and perhaps some agriculture. And also we're looking at sort of creating a strong local economy as well. So essentially a place that will be worth visiting, a place that will be worth taking picture of, which you can't say in most of the stuff that's being built around us.
Mm, it's a really interesting idea. And I suppose it gets us to the point of how do these intentional communities get started in the first place? Ian Higginbottom, how did your idea at Cascade, like where does the genesis of these ideas come from, given that you sort of, it feels like you need 14 people to get on board for day one?
Yeah, well, the idea of co-housing is it's a Danish housing model, and they built quite a number of them back in the 1970s, and two American architects, a guy called Chuck Durrett and Kathy McCant, studied that phenomenon and wrote a book. And I happened to meet them and discover the book back in 1989 and when I was in the United States. And I sent copies back to several friends and said, hey, let people know about this. I think this could be a really viable model of housing that meets our needs in Hobart. And we spread word and organised public meetings and originally with the idea of promoting the idea of co-housing, which is that particular model on the spectrum from intentional community through to single private housing, where you have your private house plus the community, kind of community centre. And so we promoted that idea as a general concept, and ultimately both the co-house that Linda is part of and Cascade came out of that. But they both have very different ownership models, which is, I think, a really important point, because Cascade Co-housing is a strata development. The houses are privately owned, like you own townhouses or an apartment.
So strata being the same model, yeah, where apartments are held. How does yours work?
Ours is a strata, whereas Linda's is a co-op. So there's an actual housing cooperative that owns the buildings. And so you end up with the same physical and community setup, but a very different ownership structure that can suit different people and different times.
Okay, we've got thousands of questions pouring into us right now from people listening back fascinated with how this all works. Okay, how often are these faith-based communities? I think, am I right, Hiri, your proposal is for a faith-based sort of development, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say it's faith-based, rather that it's based on shared values. So there's no one prescription of what people have to believe or how to act, but we all come from a similar background. In our instance, it'd be Christian background. It's, I'm from Europe, so that's what we do. But yeah, I guess faith is a very private matter, but it sort of makes you more likely to find common way when it comes to politics of these communities.
Luke, yours is a faith-based group at Poatina, is that right?
Mm. I could resonate with some of what Hiri was saying, actually. The way Poatina came into existence, a national youth and community organisation bought the entire town from the Hydroelectric Commission 25 years ago and also set it up as a strata title. And really there were some aims and objectives for the community and those that identified with those, and it was self-selecting like Ian talked about. Those that identified with those aims, objectives came. There's the Christian value base. But certainly not everyone who lives in Poatina would profess a faith in that realm.
Okay, lots of questions. Let's fire through them. How are major decisions made? Linda, how are major decisions made?
Well, as Ian alluded to, we're a cooperative, so we've got a decision-making structure. So we meet every fortnight and make decisions that develop our, you know, our agreements that we live by, and then we have a board of management that we default to for legal kind of things.
And is that a good... Are you comfortable in that decision-making process? What if somebody doesn't like the decision that gets made? They're the person lobbying for, I don't know, to be able to park boats on nature strips, or I don't know what the sort of... What, I mean, what are the
so
common big decisions that you've got
about
to
talk,
deal with?
What kind of things? Oh, gosh. What we prioritise with maintenance and, you know, like bushfire management's a really big thing for us. We live in a bushfire zone. So we've got a lot of pressure on us at the moment to make our site as bushfire safe as we can. But some people really like their gardens, even though they're fairly flammable. And other people are really concerned. They're going to all the meetings and they understand the risks and are very concerned about the danger. So we've, you know, what we did was we paid a bushfire consultant to come in and do an independent report that we've agreed to abide by so that it doesn't come down to personal choices between all of us.
Okay, another question. Let's see who wants to field this. Does it mean a lack of privacy? Luke Morgan?
Happy to do that. Look, I think it's a balance. At one end, you've got absolute privacy, don't bother me, please. At the other end, there are some that just want to spend most of their day with others. And there's something about pitching that in the middle where we have shared goals, shared values, and therefore we're heading in the same direction. But we're not living in each other's pockets. Being a strata title, people have their own space. But in all we do, we try and move together. So no one gets left behind from the youngest to the oldest. And that informs our decision-making too. Well, what we talk about, we all get to influence to the extent it affects us. Some things affect some people more than others, some less. So we're hammering out at the moment, okay, how do we review 25 years in our policy about animals and how we do that? That's just one of our current touch points and people come from a range of backgrounds on
and that. I don't want you to own a cat because I don't want it, you know, wandering through my backyard. So how are we going to deal with that?
That's right.
Our mornings around Tasmania. If you've just come to the conversation, we're talking about intentional communities. Linda Seaborn, Ian Higginbottom and Luke Morgan all live in them. And Hiri Lev would like to build one in Tasmania. Love you to join the conversation. As I say, lots of questions coming in. What are the downsides? Going to meetings all the time must get old, is a question this morning. Linda, you're laughing the loudest. Does going to meetings get old?
It does. And we find we cycle through. So there's enough of us that there'll always be somebody who's, you know, taking a bit of a step back, taking a bit of a break, and then they come forward again with new energy. So you cycle through. You get times when you're a bit tired of it and you get times when you're really enthusiastic about it.
Ian Higginbottom, another question. What are the benefits or are there benefits in terms of utilities, shared resources, et cetera?
I think there are. We've been able to share the ownership of a number of, you know, mostly smaller household items, but we've shared we have a shared laundry, but some people have chosen to have their own. So you'll see this element of choice as being so important in what we do. You can do things privately, you can do things communally. The workshop is shared. We have people who time to time share cars, but again, it's not forced. For a period when we had younger children on the site, there are again younger children on the site, which is fantastic, but there was a little bit of an after school care group. People would get together and pick up each other's children. So our neighbourliness, the proximity, really enables these things to happen when people are moved to do that. Whereas when you know your good friend is even 10 minutes away, it's much harder to make that sort of thing happen. So yes, a lot of cooperation, a lot of shared use of resources and activities.
You know, here's a challenging question. Many of these communities fail. Why? Who'd like to answer that?
I think it's hard for us to share space and accommodate each other. We're raised to be very individual. And I remember one of the first communities that I lived on that I helped to set up when I was in my mid-20s, it was a very confronting experience for all of us. We were really good-hearted and we really wanted to make it work, and that community does still exist. But it was a really challenging experience to learn to operate in a different way, to think mm-hmm. collectively and to consider the good of the group, rather than to be concerned about, you know, your needs first. You have to sort of put your needs aside a little bit, and you have to learn to do that. You're not just born knowing how to do that.
Mm. And it is, as you say, when we're raised, we're thinking about sort of that space that is our yard, or, you know, to be extremely private. People are asking questions about the loss of privacy as well. I should also mention that that lots of people are texting in. And what I learnt in preparing for this conversation is that there's a high-rise building going in Hobart.
Yeah, that's
going
to be
the Commons, yeah. Which is up near, and it looks like a cracker of a building right on the edge of the CBD. And that's going to be an intentional community, but in a high-rise building.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a really good housing cooperative in Melbourne that is in a high-rise building. It's like it's only three levels high, and they're little apartments, but they've got a big common space like Ian's co-housing and mine have, where there's a kitchen and a pantry and a guest house and a dining room and all kinds of shared facilities, but it's in an apartment block in the city, and it's fantastic.
We've got the owner of that building and some people involved in it coming in on Thursday to follow on from this conversation, because I think this has been fascinating. Look, can I thank you all for coming in and opening people's eyes to intentional communities. Linda, thank you to you.
Welcome.
Hiri, thank you. If people want to think about your community and where it's up to on the drawing board, people can look you up where, Hiri?
Just the internet, christdorf.com.au.
When would you like to have yours built by?
When?
Mm.
ASAP. 1 year, 2 years.
Ian Higginbottom, thank you to you for talking about the experience at Cascade Co-Housing. And Luke Morgan, thank you to you for making the drive in as well from Poatina Village into our Launceston studios this morning. It's been lovely to chat, Luke.
No problem. Thank you.
Intentional communities, something that I wasn't aware was so prevalent around Tasmania.